from unknown parts of metropolitan New York City. I am the hip and this is
Yes, hello, hello, good evening, or good morning, good afternoon, whenever you might be listening. Happy 2018. Yes, we have not wished a happy new year because it's been almost two months since the Hip and the Lip have done a show, but we are back, ladies and gentlemen. We are back with a vengeance. So much to talk about, so much to do, so much time, so little time.
So much fluff from the lip so to begin the episode, as usual. Yes, where's the weather update? No, thank you. We are a New York sports podcast, and look, we have a Super Bowl game coming up in 2 Sundays, a big Pro Bowl game coming up in Florida this coming weekend. I can't wait. Oh my God, what's the line?
We're all pining for the one we've all been looking forward to, indeed.
Yes, but look, we have to talk about one, you know, close playoff game, one blowout playoff game, the AFC NFC Championship weekend. We have, an AFC representative in the Super Bowl that obviously nobody expected to be there again and again and again and again and again.
And let's sing for the Pats, for the Pat franchise.
Indeed, and look, we'll get to some football giants. Hall of Fame players were elected in this evening, and touch upon some NHL hockey and some little fun games at the end. So away we go, Mr. Lip, the New England Patriots.
Yes, indeed. But there's a but. Let me ask you a question before we get to the playoffs and all that. What is the most incredible development since Hip and the Lip's last show, other than Mike Francesa retiring? Can you tell me the most incredible development since we last aired?
That the New York Islanders will be going to Belmont.
Oh, that's amazing too. But no, actually, see, here on Hip and the Lip, we have tried to refrain from using naughty language, but thanks to our president, we are now allowed to use the word shithole. Oh, yes. That word has gone mainstream, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody says it now. You see it everywhere, from newspapers to cable news shows to primetime network television. It's everywhere. And now we can all say it, and we can even say it here on Hip and Lip. All right.
Welcome to our shithole show. Okay.
Yes,
thank you.
That's what we tried to create. All right. Week in, week out here at Hip and the Lip. All right, take it away.
The bigger the shithole of a show, the better. So, I mean, look, we watched the Jaguars Patriots game, and I mean, look, the fact that the Patriots had to beat the Titans and the Jaguars to get into the Super Bowl just kind of tells you about the state of the AFC right now.
Marcus Mariota, Blake Bortles, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, I guess in a way, it makes every other team in the AFC hopeful that when Brady decides to hang up his cleats, and I wouldn't be surprised if it happens after the end of this season. Whoa, what's the lip saying? We'll get to that later. But any AFC team thinks if you can get to the Super Bowl potentially with, you know, Blake Bortles as your quarterback, well, then who can't potentially make the Super Bowl? I mean, or be one game away. So
New York Jets fans actually could be hopeful, be optimistic Jets fans. Here comes Josh Allen.
So, look, I don't think anybody really thought the Patriots were in a big hole that they couldn't, you know, they couldn't come back from a home game. The Jaguars let up a shithole of points in Pittsburgh. And even with Rob Gronkowski being concussed, it didn't matter at the end of the day. And ooh la la, the Empire State Building was in the Patriots and Eagles colors on the conclusion of the two games last Sunday. Isn't that exciting?
So New York was lighting up in Boston and Philly colors. Yes, that's exactly what we as New Yorkers love to see, right? shithole of the Super Bowl, indeed, as we get to see the Boston team against the Philadelphia team, which we have seen before. We did see it all the way back in 2004, but that was before the Patriots were officially the evil empire, as they have become.
But Donovan McNabb and company.
Yes, yes, indeed. And Terrell Owens, who had a fantastic game, making 11 catches on basically one leg. That was, you know, and it was an okay game. Donovan McNabb got sleepy at the end of the game there, as did everybody else on the Philadelphia sideline, but that's okay. And that was Super Bowl number 3 for Brady and Belichick, when everybody thought they would win every single year. And remember, folks, after that one, they had to wait all the way to 2015 before they eventually won again. And then, of course, last year, indeed. But not exactly a Super Bowl that I am excited for. I'm sure that this is not going to do record ratings. There were a few things, though, I wanted to get in the Jags-Pats game before we have a huge comprehensive breakdown of the Vikings-Philadelphia Eagles NFC Championship game, which was just so compelling. Oh, my God. One of the things that you heard after the game was the disparity in penalties, 6-1. 90-whatever yards for the Jaguars, only 10 yards for the Patriots. And I went back and I looked at it, and there was a play, 2017 Jaguars, 6.5 minutes to go. They have a 3rd and 9 from around their own 40-yard line. Mercedes, Cadillac Lewis, who had quite a touchdown pass in this game. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
On 3rd and 9, he was the intended target of Blake Bortles, and he was absolutely mugged. And you see him after the play, you know, the ball drops incomplete. You see Lewis throwing his arms up in a very demonstrative way, like, where's the penalty? I'm Mercedes Lewis. I never do this. I'm actually doing it. Must have been a penalty. And if you watch the replay, there absolutely was. Patrick Chung, the safety, grabbed him multiple times, had his jersey like in a good solid yank, couldn't get free. Ball drops incomplete. Absolutely should have been a penalty. That was one of the biggest, if not the biggest play of the game, because if they convert the first down there, they're ahead in the game. Maybe, you know, maybe they punt the ball away and it doesn't matter, but who knows? Maybe they can get a few more yards, get a field goal. And you want to say, well, the Patriots are still going to come back anyway, perhaps, but it was a huge play in the game. And then, you know, the Patriots get to go 30 yards on their game-winning drive at 20-17. To win the game after a terrible punt. And then Bortles becomes Bortles at the end of the game. Really, the whole second half, Bortles did nothing after having a pretty impressive first half. And the ball knocked down by former Bill Gilmore, as the Patriot fan that we were watching the game with, got to shout out in just sheer joy. And now we get to potentially watch the Super Bowl with this gentleman in a couple of weeks. And all right. So what did you think, Mr. Hip? Any takeaways from this championship?
Talking about a disparity of the calls, I actually thought that they should have overturned the play with James White and where he fumbled it. And well, they ruled on the field that it was a fumble, but it
looked like
Deion Lewis. You're right. Thank you. Yes, a big distinction. Yes. Sorry, I got the running back wrong. How dare I state the wrong running back on the same team?
Yes, you took my very not so very good running back from fantasy earlier in the season. But anyway.
Return for the Patriots was what I thought. So, in any event, I mean, look.
Actually, the other thing on that play is, if you did think it was a fumble, the whistle was blown, and if the whistle was not blown, then Jack potentially could have the linebacker for the Jaguars could potentially return that ball for a touchdown if the whistle's not blown. So people thought the Jaguars got screwed anyway, even with the fumble, and they went three and out anyway, punted the ball, and. So it didn't mean anything anyway for the Jaguars, that play. And there were a few other things.
I'm surprised that the Jaguars kept it that close. I mean, that they got that far ahead of a lead to begin with. So, you know, kudos to them to making it close. Blake Bortles played as well as he could have in the first half. And then the second half, he just went to the quarterback that he's pretty much played all year, sans any turnovers. I don't think he turned over the ball once, actually, in this game.
Indeed.
Maybe played a little, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, you're right. I was actually going to say
maybe played a little too conservatively. Should have been a little more aggressive, but you know, they tried to stick with the conservative game plan from the first half, and the Patriots made their defensive adjustments, and they realized Blake Bortles wasn't going to, he did make some throws downfield, but I don't know. Didn't scramble in that game at all, interestingly.
Nope, no scrambling. So actually, he plays with his arm, and in the second half just made nothing. He missed Fournette at the end of the game on that last drive when they were trying to drive for the game winning touchdown. He just did nothing in the second half. Very conservative.
He's not your city. Huh? He doesn't hit receivers in stride. I mean,
very inaccurate throw of the football. And, he played well in the first half. 55 seconds ago in the first half, there were questions as to whether or not Doug Marrone should have had his quarterback at least attempt a couple of throws, maybe see if they can move the ball a bit, get in the field goal range. He decided to take a knee, run the half out. People were being critical of that move. I'm not going to go crazy over that. I'm not going to go crazy over the officials either. I thought there was a bad pass interference call that the Patriots were the beneficiaries of in the first half that led to a touchdown. But, hey, you know, that was right before the half. But, hey, what are you going to do? And, ultimately, the Patriots are back to where they belong, as they seem to be now. They've been now 8 times in the Belichick-Brady era. Just absolutely phenomenal accomplishment for that team, for that combination, for, you know, the whole franchise organization. And now we just get to move on to our Super Bowl look ahead, since there's nothing to talk about the NFC Championship game.
If you're 25 years old and you grew up in the Boston area, I mean, God, you've been able to enjoy. It's like spoiled. When the Patriots, when they finally do, you know, when finally this era comes to an end and they're just an average team, it's going to be like unfathomable to those fans that have just had this team in the thick of it every year in and year out. Since Brady took over for Bledsoe.
Actually, I had a few numbers that I wanted to throw at everybody. I was looking at an ESPN article, but they had a couple good ones that I picked out. Now in the Brady Belichick era, they have 27 playoff victories. The next highest combo for a coaching quarterback is 14. Chuck Knoll and Terry Bradshaw. 27 for Brady and Belichick. Oh, and they have now been in 15% of all Super Bowls. So 52 Super Bowls, 15% have featured Brady and Belichick. So there you go.
How many losses does Brady have in the playoffs? How many years did they?
I think he has 9 playoff losses.
Wow.
Yep. Wow. 68 career playoff TD passes for Tom Brady. Next closest is Joe Montana with 45. And now, like I said earlier, 10 Super Bowls for this Pat franchise. And another interesting stat that's not playoffs, but do you want to guess how many times the Patriots have lost back-to-back games since 2003? Think about it. The Cleveland Browns are 1-31 or what in their last 2 years. You want to guess how many times the New England Patriots have lost back-to-back games since 2003? Take a guess.
It's 2003, the year that Brady took over for Bledsoe. Had to be right around then.
It was 2001, so that was the first Super Bowl was in 2001. Okay. Yep, just going back 15 years or 14 years, I guess.
5.
Close, 6.
6 times.
6 times
in 15 years.
Back-to-back games since 2003.
I wonder what the next fewest is for any team.
I guess that's a good question. I didn't go that far to look it up. Just for context, that would have been good, I guess. But still.
Well, why don't we just put dead air on the show until you can, you know, look at every team's history, regular season schedule going back to 2003.
And maybe you can do it. I'll just do some background music.
Is that the Sting? Is that what you just came up with, the Sting?
Yeah, close. Yeah. Well, actually, there was another one. The I don't think I can do the melody as well as I do.
All right. Let's cut you off there.
Yes. Anyway, moving on.
Next. All right. So, I don't know how many of our listeners know this, but we kind of, or really, the Lip types up some notes of things he wants to say, and so, you know, we have this document up that, you know, we kind of can reference to on occasion. And so what's really funny to me about this is, so he puts a note about the expected next Giant head coach, Pat Shurmur. Doesn't spell his name right. it's spelled Pat, Shurmer.
Oh, whoops.
That's how the Lip spells Pat Shurmur, everybody. So this So anyway, the Pat Shurmur is expected, following the rumors of Matt Patricia, who's going to be a coach, head coach for the Lions.
So we're not going to break down the NFC Championship game. Just want to make sure.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure.
Yeah, right.
Other than Nick Foles, actually made some good throws. How about that?
Yes,
against
indeed.
The team that had been great defensively and broke down at the end of the game. Didn't do well defensively against the Saints, although held on with that miracle play, and then just was a no-show in Philadelphia.
I'm still just trying to figure out who I'm rooting for in this game. I honestly am up. I'm still feel like I'm up in the air. I would say I'm leaning towards the Patriots because I despise the Eagles, especially their fan base and just all the stories that we've heard just from the NFC Championship game of their antics and throwing stuff at the Vikings bus and cursing at Case Keenum's family and all that. So I would say I think I'm leaning towards the Patriots as much as I want to root against the Patriots and as much as I would like to root for Nick Foles. Because it's a nice story, he's just wearing the wrong jersey and the wrong fan base.
Okay.
For him.
I think I might root for the Patriots, but for a different reason.
Yeah, right.
And that reason is, as I alluded to earlier, chance if the Patriots win the Super Bowl. I'll say that again.
Yep.
In case you didn't get it.
Yep.
I think if the Patriots win the Super Bowl,
right,
there is a chance that Tom Brady retires.
I don't think
it's that far-fetched.
I don't think he gives a damn about going out on top. I don't think he cares. I think he wants to play. I mean, everything we hear about him, you know, just his workout routine and his whole health plan and his job, everything. I mean, he wants to play until he's 45, maybe longer if he can physically withstand it. I just don't see.
I know retiring. That's what everybody hears. And I just think that
I think it's
he's going to have an epiphany after they win and he's going to realize, you know, do I really need to do this for a couple more years? I'm slow. I'm slow in the shithole pocket that I try to navigate through. And there's really just little benefit other than taking a big check. But I understand the narratives and they're all out there. Nobody's talking about Tom Brady retiring. So I'm talking about it. And that's about
right.
It. But I think there's a chance and I think, and it'll be interesting. But I think there's zero chance if they lose or next to zero on barring some injury or something bizarre happening. So I think there's a not insignificant chance that he retires if they win. So that is the reason why I guess I would rather see the Patriots win.
They're right. I mean, I truly don't think he gives a damn about going out on top, the whole going off in the sunset thing. But, hey, you know, stranger things have happened.
I think he does.
Yes,
I think he does.
Maybe he gets a big kiss from Papa John if he decides to retire. Oh, come here, Tom.
What a whole dynamic that is.
Love triangle with Papa John, Peyton, and Tom.
Well, Papa John's no longer the he stepped down from the company as the CEO.
Yep, as CEO, he's
because,
out
because he supported the NFL with the anthem protest issue. That's a whole other topic, which we don't have enough time for.
Yes. Anyway, back to Pat Shurmur after his wonderful offensive performance by the Vikings in the NFC Championship. Yes, just gives you oodles of enthusiasm and excitement for Pat Shurmur becoming the Giants head coach, as we have heard.
Hey, look, I mean, come on. Let's be fair. He took Case Keenum to the NFC Championship game. I mean, Case Keenum. I mean, you got to give some credit there.
Case Keenum. Come on. I'll say it again. Case Keenum. The guy that was on St. Louis and cut, the guy that was on Houston and cut and stunk in both places, Case Keenum. Where was Sam Bradford? Where was Teddy Bridgewater? Eh? Case Keenum's our guy
exactly.
In Minnesota. Well, we'll see if he's going to be the guy next year. Probably not. I don't think.
Probably not.
Commit a lot of money to him. Maybe the Cleveland Browns will throw a big contract at him and he'll revert back to Case Keenum in Cleveland. But with Sam Darnold sitting on the bench or something. But no, I mean, like Pat Shurmur, I mean, he's not a guy that's going to get you overly excited because he's Pat Shurmur. That's it. He's not a Belichick disciple. He's not an up-and-coming young Sean McVay offensive genius guru. You know, he's a guy that's been in the league for a long time. He coached under Andy Reid for a long time, has been in a football family. His father or his uncle or something was a long-time coordinator in the NFL. He was a head coach once before. He went 9-23 with the Browns. Whoop-de-doo, but it was the Browns. So maybe you can say, hey, 9 wins with the Browns, pretty damn good. But, you know, he didn't, I guess, handle the Cleveland media very well. Mike Holmgren said he has to lighten up. He's a little too stiff. He doesn't joke around. You know, he's too serious. And, you know, that personality may not play well here. We'll see.
I mean, this is exact. Look, if you're the guy that's you were the one that was heavily critical of the Giants' handling of Odell Beckham and not whipping him into shape. But this, if that's the this is exactly the coach you would want to address that, not some energetic, more happy-go-lucky type. So
I don't know if he's necessarily a disciplinarian that he's going to crack a whip. But, I mean, that's what any coach would have to do that. Any coach has got to come in and say, okay, Odell, here's the deal. You're going to abide by our rules or that's it. You know, this is your last chance. And I think Odell knows it's his last chance. But I think that's more – I think the general manager kind of sets the tone, and the coach is going to – you know, he's going to have to control him on game day and you know, and practice it on game day. That's what he's going to have to do. We'll see if he does. I'm not saying –
But a no-nonsense coach, I think, can foster that, at least in the early get-go.
What's funny is that McAdoo kind of at least came across as a stricter, no-nonsense, old-school football coach. And we saw that when it came to Odell Beckham, he completely cowered and was terrified to even utter a word to him or raise a finger to him. So, Shermer may end up being the right guy. I mean, everything that you hear is, you know, that Matt Patricia was the Giants' first choice, but Patricia preferred Detroit. Okay. Patricia's never been a head coach. He might end up being the next Belichick is what you hear. He's a Belichick clone. Or he might fling out after.
I mean, but have any Belichick disciples? We've talked about this. Have any Belichick's disciples have been successful as NFL head coaches yet?
Well, as NFL head coaches, I mean, there's a guy named Saban in in college that's had some success, but in the NFL, not too much. I mean, you know, we can go down the list. We don't have to. We can be here for a long time. But McDaniels failed his first time. Will he have more success this time? We'll see. He has Andrew Luck in Indianapolis, so that helps a little bit.
It's not like the Patriots' defense has been that good. I don't really understand. Like, just because he's a disciple of Bill Belichick, that's it. Like, it's not like the Patriots' defense is overachieved.
Well, first in points allowed and first in – so first in points allowed and first in yards allowed. So
they've overachieved in yardage. they've overachieved in the points and yards. I mean, what? That just doesn't add up.
That's impressive. I mean, I think that's probably why Patricia got the job. They're like, "How did you do that? My God, how'd you make the math work?"
Yeah, exactly.
He's more a rocket scientist. I guess he has his degree in like rockets or something engineering from like Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute upstate New York. So he's a rocket scientist. So how he made those numbers work is anybody's guess. But again, Shermer, I think he's a good hire. We'll see if he works out, or at least a decent hire. We'll see if he works out. Maybe he'll end up being a great hire. Time will tell. How is he handling Eli Manning at 37? And
let's see him get hired. Let's see the season isn't over yet. Let's see the offseason play out, and we'll start talking about it a little bit more. But
they said they're bringing back Eli. That begs the question, will they take a quarterback at number two? And we can debate this, as there'll be so much debate down the road. So we'll have to spend an hour or a year on it now, as we'll hear everywhere leading up to the April draft. But we'll see what they do. But Eli, they say, is coming back. Do they ask him to take a pay
cut? Depends on what they think of Davis Webb and what they think of who they could get at number two. And that's probably still far from being fully assessed.
Here's the one thing, though. If they take a quarterback, $28 million tied up in the quarterback position, at least cap-wise, if they take a quarterback.
For how many more years?
I don't know if they can do that.
How many more years?
Well, for next year, I'm saying. I'll have $28 million committed to
the cap. So, look, it's just 1 year. I mean, but it's just 1 year.
Yeah, but that's a lot of money tied up in one position. I think they're going to have to ask Eli to restructure his deal, is what I'm saying. And does Eli take a little offense to that? Will he get a little squeamish or like, oh, how dare you ask me to take a pay cut? I'm Eli Manning after you sat me down.
So what if he gets squeamish?
I'm just saying. Just say. But they claim they're bringing him back. All right. New York Giants, 2018. Get excited.
All right. So look, we've had some more, a few, let's say call it sporadic warm days in January this year, like 3 or 4 days where it was like in the 40s. And, you know, even most recently, it's like you get that first or second warm day and it's like, is the spring coming? And what do I think of when the weather starts to warm up? March Madness and baseball. Well, we still got a ways to go till either of those things actually happen. But we did have the Hall of Fame news come out tonight.
Hell of a lady. And there are couple warm days. Baseball Hall of Fame vote.
That's right. So there are four new MLB Hall of Fame inductees: Chipper Jones, Vladimir Guerrero, Jim Thome, and Trevor Hoffman. Couple guys that did not get voted in who were on the ballot: Edgar Martinez, Gary Sheffield, Manny Ramirez, Johan Santana, and of course the steroids brethren, the Bonds and the Clemens of the world.
Hey, they're trending up though.
What did you? I didn't even know that this was happening today until somebody told me. But then I was kind of my interest was piqued.
The warm days, you just said the warm days, so that then triggered your memory of the Baseball Hall of Fame vote.
Well, I remember we talked endlessly about Mike Piazza and everything surrounding
our very
that.
First show ever. If you remember, that was our very first show.
See that? This is why I rely on you for the details about the sports, because I did not.
Yep, we talked extensively about Mike Piazza getting into the Hall of Fame.
So why don't we just do it again while we're at it? Yes, yeah, so let's spend the next half an hour breaking down Mike Piazza's Hall of Fame induction from 1 year ago.
Actually, two years ago.
2 years ago, let's break down a speech.
Oh, Mike Piazza. Is he deserving to be in the Hall of Fame despite the cloud, the suspicion of steroids surrounding
the back knee? How do you think the back knee is now? They should have made him take off his shirt when he got inducted as a final test.
Well, now he would have been like, no, it's all gone now. I stopped doing steroids like 5 years ago, so it's all gone. Barry Bonds is, though, I think his head shrunk at least like 5 inches in the last 10 years. So, hey, my steroid days are over, too. Oh, yes, Barry Bonds and Clemens, though, trending up.
I still think that it's ridiculous at the end of the day that there's this big void of these players who, you know, statistically, they should just be in the Hall of Fame. And look, if you put them in the Hall of Fame and just be transparent about everything surrounding the player.
I agree. They need to reconcile this. They cannot continue to ignore it. And everything that you've seen written is like, you know, writers are getting fed up too. They're like, you know what? I can't take this anymore. I'm just voting for them. I'm voting for them. They should be in the Hall of Fame. I don't care. You know, then we have to speculate, well, how long did it take steroids? What kind of steroids? For what purpose? You know, who do we leave in? Who do we leave out? Did they have to fail a drug test? That we have to just be suspicious? We have to look at his back knee or the size of his head? Did he puncture a hole in it? Did he widen his neck hole when he put his head through his shirt? They're just fed up with it. At least most of them are. And that's why I think you're going to eventually see Bonds and Clemens get in. But as you said, what about everybody else? And you mentioned Sheffield, Manny Ramirez. What about Sosa? McGuire's off the ballot now. You know, he would have been automatic. Sosa, Palmeiro. I mean, you can go down the list. They have to do something about this already.
Yeah.
But I will say the three of the four guys that got in, I'm happy they got in. The other one,
So, hey. Trevor Hoffman is the all the same.
He's the best closer of all time. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's right. The other guy, that Mo guy, who will be eligible next year, I believe. Isn't that right? Will be the best closer in the Hall of Fame as soon as he gets voted in with like 98% or whatever he's going to get. Hoffman.
Is he the one that you had?
Yeah.
He was the one?
Yeah,
I was wondering maybe Jim Thome.
Jim Thome is kind of a little I mean, you know, because he was in the league for like a 222 years.
He was a compiler. And the latter part of the year extended from playing the DH probably for the last 10 years. 500 home run club, though.
600 home run club.
600. That's right. Actually, I saw. Thank you. Guess what number he is for home runs of all time?
Well, how many or where he ranks?
Yeah, well, ranks. Where does he rank for most home runs of all time?
So you have Bonds, Ruth, and we're including the steroid boys, right? Bonds, Ruth, Aaron, Mays, A-Rod. Was Griffey, how many did the Griffey end up with? I forget now. I'm just going to say number six.
You think Jim Tomey has the six most home runs of all time in Major League Baseball history?
No, never mind. I'll say nine.
It is eight.
Eight, okay.
I mean, eight is only
in between
two away from kind of six. So after Mays, it's Griffey, Pujols, and then
Pujols. Right. I forgot. Forgot about Pujols.
And yeah, A-Rod has more than Willie Mays, by the way.
Yeah. Now I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody. Actually, yeah. And I do think that Edgar should eventually get in. I know people disagree with that because he was a DH, but you just said so yourself. Jim Tomei played first base, I guess, for half his career, and then the last half of his career, DH. So you know what? Let Edgar in. He was great.
I was a little surprised that Aubrey Huff didn't get voted into the
Hall of Fame. Yes, of course. What about Orlando Hudson?
These guys were on the ballot. Orlando Hudson and Jason Isringhausen. I mean, Jason Isringhausen at least became like a competent closer, but these guys you could have voted for. Imagine if a writer, you think a writer actually voted for Aubrey Huff to get in?
Oh, yeah. I think they all got votes. They might have been like two, but they got votes.
Even though there's a limited number of players that you can vote for.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they figured everybody because I think they get together and they're like, all right, well, we can't allow Chipper Jones or Gloria, you know, to get 99%. So right, since we all agree he's a Hall of Famer, who's going to vote for Aubrey?
Somebody's voting for Aubrey Huff over Chipper Jones.
Probably, yeah.
Somebody is checking that the
just
Aubrey
to make
Huff
sure
box
he's not and 100% or 99%.
Did that person watch any baseball?
But that's why though.
God,
they're
Chipper
just
Jones was such a good hitter.
Oh. They're ensuring that Chipper Jones does not get 99%. They're like, well, you know, he was a Hall of Famer, but you know, let's not go crazy. He's not a 99% Hall of Famer. He's a 93% Hall of Famer.
It's just so stupid.
So
okay.
Let's vote for Aubrey Huff and Orlando Hudson. Yes.
Oh my God. They're on the ballot. Okay. Look, the Islanders. They were running pretty well, I think, in like late November, early December, and they were scoring a lot of goals. And yes, they were letting up goals, but they've kind of gone up and down a lot recently. Just give us the high level blue sky view of the Islanders right now as they are in the thick of a playoff race.
I think a bird's eye view, the bird actually might fall into the lake that is the Barclays Center. They go out; they only go out to see to die. And that's what the Islanders are doing. They're going out to see to die. As they, we can be here all night because I could just go on and on about this team right now. What's going
Please
on?
Please do.
Mm-hmm, yes, indeed. And of course, let's not forget their arena situation. So much breaking news with the Islanders arena.
We covered that already.
Indeed, but when you look at this Islander team, and I mean, you just look at the fact that they boast right now two lines, their top two lines that feature John Tavares and Matthew Barzal, flanked by Anders Lee, who's going to score 40 goals, Josh Bailey, who's on his way to a career season times 100, who only 2 years ago I might have actually called the worst player in the NHL because that's how bad he was playing. 2 years ago when they made their run into the playoffs against Florida and then won the series and whatever. And then of course, Jordan Eberle, who's been very, very good. And Andy Beauvillier, who's come back from the minors with a vengeance and has been on fire playing with Matt Barzal and Jordan Eberle. And Andrew Ladd eventually will come back and he will hopefully not take Beauvillier's spot on the second line. He will come back and just claim a spot on the third line. But that's where we get to is their bottom six, which has been absolutely atrocious. Now, I just have a few numbers I'm going to throw at you, and we could be here all night. But I just want to do this, though, because I just had to look it up. So since December 19th, they played 16 games. I'm going to throw some numbers at you. 54, 51, 61, 45, 60, 64, 54, 52, 52, 41, 57, 67, 62, 53, 63, 59. You want to guess what those numbers are? And I have our listeners guess as well. Guess along.
Something to do with the number of, I don't know, I'm trying to think of something funny. I don't, shot, something to do with shots. Come on, let's go. All right. Yeah. Yes.
So, yes, indeed. No, it's not shots on goal, even though you would think that every game they're giving up like 50 plus shots. That was only one game against Montreal. Those are shot attempts against since December 19th, which, again, 16 games. They've been out-attempted in every game except for two games. In the Ranger game, they were tied, and they won that game 7-2. They were actually one of the better possession teams in the league in the first, I guess, 2 months of the year. They are now ranked 21st out of 31st out of 31 teams in the league. The Rangers actually are last, if you can believe it or not. They give up shooting galleries every game since December 19th. I think they have yielded at least 30 shots. There have been multiple games where they've given up 40 shots. One, they gave up 50 shots. Their defensive zone coverage, their defense in general has been absolutely dreadful. Like, they don't even have any competent coaching. They lead the NHL right now in goals for. They lead the NHL in goals. We're tied with Tampa. And they also lead the league in goals against. That's right, folks. And not only just lead the league, they lead the league by a solid 9 goals. They have a -9 differential. And they lead the NHL in goals. Go figure that.
You're letting up that many shots, that, you know, the Corsi and goals allowed is somewhat correlated.
And exactly. And that's why so many people believe in the advanced stats. Shots attempts aside, the Islanders right now are able to score goals. I mean, they've gone through a couple dry spells this year, but when you boast an offense that has players on the top two lines that I just mentioned, and we'll get back to Barzal in a second, who has been beyond all-star level, and you boast a bottom nine that features names like Alan Quine and Shane Prince and Tanner Fritz and Cal Clutterbuck and Jason Chimera, guys that are all beyond worthless, that give you absolutely nothing. I mean, Clutterbuck's been a little bit better, and you can get by with him as a fourth line right winger. That's fine. But when you have a guy in Joshua Hosang, I mean, this time last year, we were clamoring for him to come up. Eventually, he was brought up, and he played very, very well. He made the team out of camp this year, has been bounced around, has been sent back to the minors twice, is currently rotting in the minor leagues. And you're going to have two different schools of thought. You still have people that believe that Joshua Hosang should be there. I am not in that camp. I think the Islanders are bungling that situation. They are mishandling, and they are going to ruin the kid. Eventually, they will end up dumping him, and he will go to another team where I hope he shoves it right down the throats of every person in this organization. And I haven't mentioned the name Garth Snow yet, but
why are they keeping him down there?
So, I mean, he was sent down for really unknown reasons, path of least resistance, which is a philosophy that the Islanders embrace. Since if you have to put a guy like Alan Quine on waivers, God forbid you do that, because someone may not claim him, and then we just dump him back in the minors. But hey, we don't want to risk somebody claiming him, even though he might be the worst player in the NHL right now, Alan Quine. But you know,
that's because he's such a big goal scorer. How many goals has he scored in his last 18 games?
Yes. How many, Jim? Well, that would be a big fat zero. Yes. Zero goals in 18 games.
They're going to be rushing to the waiver wire. Quine. Sorry, Alan.
Yeah, sorry, Alan. No, back to the minors you go. Or every team will be lined up to claim him. And Hosang, though, they just give you the same stupid, vague, nonsense platitudes that we've heard from them ever since he's been brought up here. He's immature. He's immature. He's immature. Oh, what does that mean? Oh, it just means he's immature. Really? He's 22 years old and he's immature. Go figure. Oh, you mean he'll turn the puck over every now and again? Oh, my God. Let's banish him to Siberia. And you hear about accountability with this team. You've heard that word used by the coach, Doug Weight, a few times recently. But it's only accountability for your young players that you can just label as immature and dump in the minors and not have to risk anybody claiming them off the waiver wire. Again, path of least resistance when it comes to the New York Islanders. Alan Quine, like you said, 0 goals in 18 games. Shane Prince, 1 goal and 2 points in 12 games. Brock Nelson has 1 goal in his last 19 games. Jason Chimera has 2 goals on the season. And he has a grand total of 9 points in 49 games. He has 20. He's played in 27 more games than Joshua Hosang, and he has 3 less points than Joshua Hosang. Jason Chimera is a black hole right now. He's actually competing with Alan Quine for who's the worst player in the NHL. It is criminal what Garth Snow is doing or what he's not doing. You haven't heard from him. He never talks because he has to hide. He's in hibernation. He's in witness protection. Who the hell knows? He's getting his next cheeseburger. Maybe he's sharing cheeseburgers with our president. Who knows?
What's Jack Capuano doing?
And he's still assistant coach in Florida.
All right.
He's having Ohio time. Actually, now Florida stinks, so he's not having Ohio time.
And what's funny is that, most of these guys will probably no longer be on the team when they finally play in Belmont, because.
And that might also be like 17 years from now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they'll all be gone. It'll be like 17 years from now when they actually have a game there. So,
looking forward to that. Indeed. Who knows? Maybe, 44-year-old Alan Quine might still be on the team. He could still he's a veteran presence. Come on. Strong locker room presence. And our new hotshot rookie, maybe John Tavares Jr., he's, he's hanging out in Alan Quine's basement, like Matthew Barzal, hanging out and living in Dennis Seidenberg's basement. That's why we can't cut Seidenberg. Come on. He's so invaluable to our team and to the locker room. And he's letting Matthew Barzal play his Xbox in his basement. We can't possibly get rid of the amazing Dennis Seidenberg.
I know they've let up a lot of attempts, but it just feels like the goaltending hasn't been at the same level this year.
It has not been good. Grice is, I would say Grice actually, is probably the worst goalie in the NHL. So if they have the worst left winger in the NHL and Jason Chimera, the worst center, right, whatever you want to call Alan Quine, Islanders probably also have the worst goaltender in the NHL in Grice. He has been atrocious. Halak at least has played better. Halak, even strength save percentage of like non high danger area opportunities or something is like fifth in the league or something. So he's actually gotten better. His rebound control still stinks, but whatever, I think you can live with Halak right now. They need a backup goalie or someone that they can tandem with him.
In other words, he's not letting up soft goals.
He always seems to have a Halak special. Like he still will let in a soft goal that'll make you want to get hair out every now and again.
Special sounds like a good thing of like that it's like some kind of climax for the lip.
Yeah, special.
Halak special.
Well, that's whenever Islander fan climaxes is when they see the Halak special. there's been several of those this year, especially earlier in the year. But he's been better. He's gotten better, and I think you can live with him for right now. The Islanders need to trade. It's very simple for Garth Snow. Hey, Garth, put down the cheeseburger. It's very simple. All you have to do is go trade a couple of draft picks and a prospect for Derek Brassard from Ottawa. They're looking to dump him. You long-term IR, Nikolai Kuhlman. You wait for Ladd to come back. Should be back in a week or so. At least, they're very tight-lipped, but that's my guess. So a week, week and a half. You bring back up Joshua Hosang, put him at right wing, and all of a sudden you have a competent third line. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. What did I just do, Garth Snow? Did I just give you a very easy blueprint to improve at least one of your lines? And then maybe you can dump Nelson in that trade, too, since he's useless right now. And then you roll with your fourth line, at least for right now, and maybe you bring another depth guy in. Maybe go out and get Benoit Pouliot from the Sabres, or go out and get Gustav Nyquist from Detroit. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, Garth. Oh, no, I can't do that. You do nothing.
Well, we'll see. Though, maybe.
Who is finally feeling some heat as he has gotten absolutely hardened Garth apologists are coming out against him. Guys always defended him. They're finally turning on him and saying, it is a dereliction of duty. Garth Snow.
All right. All right. Well, Hip and the Lip is back, so I'm sure that we'll see the change implemented immediately.
Yes, obviously. But how about Matthew Barzal, though? I mean, how often do you climax an uptuck watching that guy?
Yes.
Legitimately, he is.
I just keep thinking about how he committed a penalty while he was coming out of the penalty box. That's all I think about Matthew Barzal. Was that his first game? That was his first career game, right?
I think it was. He played two games last year. I don't remember if it was his first or second.
It was one of them, and I remember how excited I was, and I'll never erase that from my memory, Matthew Barzal.
No, I think it was his second game because that's when he was banished back to juniors. It was right after that game where he was scratched for the next like 10 game or whatever many and then dumped back in juniors. And they'll be like, oh, the Islanders did such a great job with Barzal putting him back in juniors. You know what? He probably would have been this good last year. That's how insanely talented this guy is. He is going to be a special, he already is a special, special player. You even heard Max Pacioretty call him the best skater in the league. Max Pacioretty, who's had some success in the NHL, called him the best skater in the league. I mean,
well, we better give stock to Max Pacioretty's claim. Yes. Yeah, oh God.
He's been on the trade block too. Apparently, he's been rumored. Go out and get him, Garth. No. Alan Quine, Jason Chimara, veteran leader, veteran locker room presence. Hey, invaluable. Building nonsense. Belmont.
We have to go into this.
Yeah, it was news. Well, we do know they're going to be playing 12 games at the Coliseum. Or Newsday is reporting that the Barclays is looking for the Islanders to play 12 games at the Coliseum next year. Oh my God, so exciting! Now we get to drive out to Long Island instead of taking the subway to Barclays. Oh yes, sitting on that Meadowbrook Parkway traffic. Can't wait.
Yeah, but I mean, I think a lot of people are probably happy to hear that. So it's nice to have your selfish opinion, but the core fan base on Long Island is ecstatic.
Well, fine, but the place holds like 12 people, and the bathroom lines apparently are actually even worse than they were. The bathroom like situation is going to be even worse than it was in the old Coliseum. The situation at Barclays, at least on the upper level, which is where we usually are, is also worse than the Coliseum.
They're going to sell out, and the people are going to go, and so it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, but me and you selfishly are going to miss the abundance of bitter hipster bars that feature such amazing.
Why? Because they're having. It's not like they're having 40 games there. It'll be
split 50-50 after next year. So next year they're saying 12. And then the next 2 years before the Belmont is ready, of course, like you said, maybe 17 years.
Do you go to 20 games? Even if you went, you wouldn't even go to all the games anyway.
I'm just saying. I mean, I just laugh at the whole situation because it's so ridiculous.
Plus, but you're not laughing. You're bitching. You're not laughing.
I mean, you're right. I am bitching, but I'm also laughing because it's just so ridiculous. And now maybe it gives John Tavares one more reason to go, maybe I'll go somewhere else. And the team that wants to pay me $15 million a year, reportedly. So
let him go. Let him go.
And then we can hear Gart's
excuse. You're probably not ready to grapple with that possible reality, but maybe it's more likely than you want.
Trade deadline is coming up. A little over a month. Trade deadline.
All right, Lip. What is your let's hear it. Hipster moment of Zenith.
Yes, indeed. So I actually have three for you this week, and actually they're kind of H. So Jimmy G, you know that guy, Jimmy G. Who could I possibly be referring to? Jimmy G, Jimmy Garoppolo. Oh yes, that guy, the guy that everybody was so worried that the Patriots traded him away when Tom Brady's little cut, his little paper cut on his hand. Oh, it was such a big news story. Yes. Oh, we saw how much of an effect it had on him last week. Indeed. Jimmy G, Jimmy Garoppolo. Why am I keep saying his name over and over? Who cares? He's on the 49ers. Well, interestingly, the guy that you followed, our Twitter handle, that you followed on the Twitters, your old CPA buddy, what's his name? Raiola? What's his name?
Yeah, Robert Raiola.
Sure. Robert Raiola. Always has a lot of H tidbits, and one that I thought was very H that he just had. I don't know if you did see it or if this is going to be
no
prize for you as well. So, because of the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo played 8 games for the New England Patriots this year and did not finish the season on an AFC team, he is going to get game checks for both the AFC championship game, well, every playoff game. Through the Super Bowl. So every playoff game, the divisional round, the AFC championship, and the Super Bowl. And get this, because of the fact that he will not be earning his game check by, I guess, and you can correct me if I'm not saying this right, because he's not working or performing duties to get his game check in the state of Minnesota, he is not going to incur any state income tax. Ergo, he will be getting paid more money than Tom Brady for the Patriots Super Bowl appearance and potentially win in the Super Bowl.
Why is he not paying any state income tax? Is he a resident of a non-income tax state?
That's what because I guess he's not working in the state, so he's not going to be taxed for that state's income tax, I guess.
But if he lives in a state with an income tax, then that state will tax it. So okay, presumably he must live in a state that doesn't have a state income tax.
Well, I guess he's. I guess he's only going to be incurring that state income tax as opposed to getting taxed on wherever he lives. So where any player lives, plus Minnesota's income.
No, you don't pay both taxes. You don't pay double the tax.
Okay. Well, I mean, the guy, but he made a credit. It point of saying that Jimmy Garoppolo will be making more money than Tom Brady.
I'm not trying to rain on the parade here. I think it's very, but why does he get a check for the NFC?
No, I'm saying because he is on an NFC team. If he would have finished on AFC team, I guess he wouldn't have gotten a game check for, he wouldn't have gotten the playoff, not game check, playoff share for the Super Bowl or the AFC championship game. But because he finished on an NFC team, he is now able to collect the playoff share for every playoff game, including the Super Bowl.
But why does he get to? Oh, because he was on the Patriots for.
Right, because he played eight games. If he played a minimum of eight games on their roster,
So any player that was on the Patriots roster for eight games.
I don't know if there's anybody else that they had and they cut, so it's possible. But made it a point of saying Jimmy G will be making more money for the playoffs for the Super Bowl share than Tom Brady will be. So, however, the tax situation works itself out. He'll come out ahead. Thought that was kind of H. All right. And then also, so two more things. So on top of that, the Mighty Ducks. We've made so many, or at least I have made so many Mighty Ducks references over the years on H&L here. I have to announce that for those that don't know, the Mighty Ducks are making a comeback. That's right. No, not the Anaheim Ducks. They're not the Mighty Ducks anymore. They're just the Ducks. The Mighty Ducks are coming back, folks. A TV series has been green-lighted and is in the production. I don't know what's coming out. They haven't said anything, but it will eventually be coming to a TV screen near you. Yes, still no word if it's going to be just a reboot or with the same characters, just in whatever, new story, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But the Mighty Ducks will be making their triumphant return. Indeed.
Yes, I'm reading Robert Iola's tweet right now from 13 hours ago.
I'm going back to the part one of the HMOZ.
Yeah, I don't know.
But he does say that Garoppolo will be making more money than Tom Brady, right?
He does.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's always dedicated to the.
I love his Twitters.
Peter Tibbetts.
He's got so many good Twitters.
I've talked to him about it.
All right.
Talk to him about
it. All right.
Yeah, I've had lunch with him.
I know you've. I know you said. I'm glad you followed him. He's got so many interesting.
I'm so glad. Yes. Yeah. I don't check Twitter nearly as much as I used to now.
Yeah, so you're missing my Twitters then. And then one more. I got one more before we move on. It actually is a good segue to the hipster beer of the week. So I actually stumbled upon this just a little while ago. So this date, January 24th, 1935. Yes. What happened on this date in 1935?
Beer was just put in a can.
Oh, I didn't know.
I just randomly guessed.
Oh, really? Okay. I guess because I said the perfect segue. but you are correct. Canned beer makes its debut on this day in 1935. The Gottfried Kruger Brewing Company, I'm sure they had massive lines for their can releases, delivered 2,000 cans of Kruger's finest beer and Kruger's cream ale to faithful Kruger drinkers in Richmond, Virginia. 91% of the drinkers approved of the canned beer, and they approved more in production, further production. All right. So how about that?
I wonder how much that lagged like soda in a can.
Soda in a can. I mean, bottles. Well, it did. I just don't know if they put it in cans. It might have been still in bottles at that point.
Right, I know. Yeah, I'm wondering, like, which came first. I think probably beer in a can was before soda in a can.
Maybe it did. And now today, canned beer accounts for approximately half of the $20 billion U.S. beer industry. Ooh, how about that?
Surprised it's not more than that.
Yeah. Well, that canned beer should account for more than half.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Well, on that note, that shall take us from the HMOZ to the most anticipated moment of the day. Everybody's favorite, yours and mine, of course. That would be the Hipsta Beer of the Week. And either reflect on the last thing I said or just get right into it, Mr. Hip.
Well, one thing I we could both say is, even though there's been a roughly two-month hiatus, the Hipsta Beer check-ins have not stopped on either part. Oh, and nevertheless, I am now we're going to have to do something for the 1,000th check-in. We still have a ways to go. I'm still 61 away.
Oh my God.
But in the since the last episode, I mean, I think I've, out of those 939, I probably have like four beers that are that I rated a five, maybe four. I don't think it's more than that. But one of those four was checked in. One of those four was checked in within since the last show. So I think that made it easy to share with you this episode's Hipsta Beer of the Week. It comes courtesy what we would say now, a regular of the Hipster Beer of the Week, Magnify Brewing, based in Fairfield, New Jersey. And I did go to the brewery since our last show as well, and purchased several cans at my, you know, they regularly release on now Wednesdays, and the cans often last for a couple of days. Which is a breath of fresh air compared to some other places that sell in like sell out 30 seconds. But anyway, so they have this Rock Me Doctor series of hazy IPAs, and a few weeks ago they did a single hop variants, Rock Me Doctor Citra, and it confirmed to me that Citra is probably the favorite hop that I can isolate and that I know that is just amazing. And this particular beer was, you know, it's an 8% IPA. They say that they brewed it with lots of oats and hopped it exclusively with an endless amount of Citra. Well, it's just one of those beers endless. That is so
keeps going and going,
so smooth, and it almost felt like it was quenching your thirst, even though we know beer does not do that. But that was that's how it felt. When consuming
after every sip,
yes, it was just that enjoyable, no bitterness at all.
So one of only four that has earned the prestigious five rating.
Might be only four beers that I've given a four, given a five.
939, only four, and this is one. Oh, look at
a lot of four, in fairness, there's a lot of four fives, a lot of four fives, a decent number of 4.75s, but yeah, I think it's only four 5.0s.
I'm sure everybody's wondering, what makes a perfect five beer? What makes a perfect beer?
Well, you got to look at the ones that I've had. And
maybe just answer the question. Maybe if the beer is quenching your thirst, there's your answer. You got a perfect five there, everybody.
Maybe. Exactly. Yes. All right.
You know,
all right.
Feel parched,
all right. All right.
Like,
well,
like drinking like a Bud Light. Oh, I feel so parched. Oh, after drinking that Bud Light, or out of that, after drinking that Milwaukee's Best. Ah. I wonder what the folks of Richmond, Virginia, thought after they drank a nice Kruger's Finest beer back in 1935. Oh, it's so refreshing. Ah.
Yeah, right. Well, we're back in the mix here, and will there not be a Super Bowl preview show? Well, it's not like anybody else will be analyzing the game, so maybe we just have to.
Yes, maybe we'll have as much fun as we did recapping his last year. Probably not. I mean, last year was an epic, epic game where we just had so much to yell and scream about. So maybe we'll come close though. unless Nick Foles, the pumpkin return, you know, the clock strikes midnight, he turns back into a pumpkin, just like Case Keenum did, and Tom Brady will throw 5 touchdown passes and they'll win 42-10. we can just come on the next day and go, all right, that was a shitty game. Next.
Let's get some warm weather for some college basketball and some baseballs.
Oh, that's and the Islanders. You want to break down the Michigan Wolverines college basketball season? Take it away.
Yes. Yes, let's do it. Mr. Moritz Wagner, just keep watching. Right, just keep watching them. Hey, look, they were ranked. I think they may have fallen out because they had a bad loss in Nebraska, but
Nebraska.
They're like a top 25-ish team, though. They beat the Spartans, who are, you know, top 5. They're a relevant squad this year. They can make a run.
Yeah, right.
Oh, actually, they play Purdue tomorrow. Oh, that's going to be a good game.
Yeah, that's wise. Purdue.
Purdue's third in the country. Purdue's it's in third? Purdue.
What?
Yeah.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Purdue.
So this game. Oh, so that I'm glad you asked. Now I look have something to look forward to watching to tomorrow all night, right, 7 o'clock. Right. Michigan going to Indiana.
I'm guessing an ESPN game.
ESPN game. Will Mr. Dick be present?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think so. You think he will be?
Mr. Tom?
No, Mr. Tom. Dick Vitale.
Oh, that guy. Yeah. I guess maybe.
No, you got. You sound like Tony Romo a little bit. Oh,
and it's a fumble, but Take it easy there, Tony. Take it easy. They'll replay it. They'll determine if it was a fumble.
No, we don't stop. No, don't take it easy. We want more. We want more. Is it a CBS game for the Super Bowl?
Unfortunately, no.
NBC. Ah, man.
Yep, so we're gonna, Collinsworth and his RPO.
Oh, he had the good old Al Michaels.
RPO. Here come the RPOs again. Oh, another RPO. Oh, another RPO. Run pass option. Are they going to run or pass? Maybe they'll pass. Oh, and that was a run.
Definitely RPO with Nick Foles.
No, oh, there'll be lots of RPO and Nick Foles. None of that with Tom
Brady.
Well, all right. Michigan,
checking back in.
Tell former Michigan defensive end Brandon Graham to get his ass in the backfield and take down Tom.
Get his ass. Yeah. Yep. Especially his ass. Let's get it back there.
Well, his ass lives in the Giants' backfield, so maybe you can make
it. All right. Yes, because that's courtesy of Eric Flowers. All right.
Oh, I think
he was okay. He wasn't that terrible, though.
I think Dave is going to get rid of him.
All right.
Coming back, and I hope you will see you next time. All right.
See you for the next Slurperlific.
Yes.
Right now. Shithole.